Move this down. It's covering my face. Maybe I want it covering my face.
Maybe it should cover your face.
It probably should.
Well, with that, we are officially kicking off the Barnes Bullet Points podcast.
Very nice. It's a great name.
That is a great name. This is episode one. I think it's going to be kind of interesting to get through, right? Because
none of us. This one or all of them?
Probably all of them.
Yeah.
As we kind of work through it. But my thought is that I've never hosted a podcast. I've been on quite a few podcasts.
I've been on one.
Yep. Okay. Our guest today, Greg Sloan, has been on.
It's been probably like six or seven.
Six or seven.
So I'm no pro.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm probably about that same amount. Yeah. Six or seven. But now we have to host a podcast and have conversations with people that we have conversations with
every day.
Regularly. Yeah.
Do you know how to host?
We're going to figure it out. We're going to let the audience let me know how good or bad. And if I should get kicked off and maybe I'll get booted off the island. All right. So with, let me kind of turn myself down too. This is all like learning experience, right? So with that, we're going to kick this off and I think it's only right for us to talk about the history of Barnes.
Agreed.
Right. To at least like put some groundwork in, for this. So that's why we have Sloan. Would love for you to introduce yourself, kind of give us a little bit of background about yourself, as well as like how long you've been working at Barnes before we really get into the story of Barnes, to at least let the audience know why you should, or at least like why you have that capability, right? To really talk about all this.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. So I'm Greg Sloan. I have worked at Barnes almost 18 years. It'll be 18 years this November. So it's been a minute.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of growth, a lot of change. Yeah, so that's part of that. I started out, so I'm a Utah native.
Right.
Grew up in the West, hunting, outdoors, all those things I love. Guns, I'm a kind of a gun ballistic nut.
Yeah.
Love hunting, big game, obviously. So what drove me to Barnes originally is I love cartridges, ballistics, you know. I was kind of a odd, probably teenager in that I read reloading manuals for fun before I'd ever even hand-loaded ammunition. I just ate up ballistic charts, data, cartridge information. That just, you know, it was just a passion of mine. And so I wanted to work in this industry. I loved rifles, kind of, you know, I'm a rifleman.
Right.
Read everything I could. And so I was like, I came from a construction background, actually, and I could see real quick. I was like, this is not for me. Right. I need to do something different.
Yeah.
And I wanted to work in this firearm and ammunition industry. So being a Utah native, I looked around what options were local and those kind of things. And there was an opportunity for a ballistic lab technician position. So that's back in 2007.
Wow.
So yeah, I'd actually got married that year.
Okay.
Got married in May.
Yeah.
And in that November, I started a barn. So I've seen a lot of growth over the years. Like I said, I've had a lot of opportunities myself in different positions with the company.
Yeah.
Been able to grow as the company did as well.
Okay.
And that brings us kind of where we are today as far as me. Mm-hmm. But I'm, you know, married, I have four kids, love the outdoors. We do a lot of camping, fishing, dirt biking.
Right.
You know, mountain biking, shooting, you know, teaching my kids to hunt. Yeah. All those things. That's what we do. So that's.
So me. I mean, you said something about like you kind of always wanted to be quote in the industry. Like, was being a ballistician kind of the first thought? Was like that where you wanted to go, or did you have kind of like different ideas of quote how to get in the industry? Right. Everybody wants to say, oh, you know, they're watching TV show growing up or something like hunting. And it's like, man, I'd love to hunt for a living or something like that. Right. But there's multiple different facets that you can work within the industry and not hunt for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, back then I would say it was probably more on the gun side than the ammo side that intrigued me.
Yeah.
I had done some gunsmithing courses, things like that. Cause that was, you know, it was kind of the whole package though. You know, it wasn't just, I was a gun nut. It was, I understood the relationship between the firearm and the ammunition, and it was the cartridge. It was, like I said, I was reading reloading manuals and ballistic charts and comparing this cartridge and its specifics to that cartridge and its capabilities.
Right.
And so I think that was, even if I didn't recognize it then, that was drawing me to the ammunition side. I've always been more of a technical person.
Yeah.
I like data. You know, I'm not like a specific engineer, although that's, you know, more what I've worked into, those kind of roles, but more from a management side.
Right.
Over the years, and I can get into that later, but always had that kind of that mindset, more scientific, technical nature to dig in, you know, but from a very common sense, everyday perspective, I would say.
I mean, you had the knowledge of how the guns worked, right? How ammo worked and all that type of stuff. So then you were already in love with all of that. And then this was just able to like help you meld that and then go further into, you know, working with it every single day.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And gun magazines, you know, I'm not that old, I don't think. But I'm old enough that print magazines, you know, I know in today's world, that's not that popular anymore.
Yeah.
But that was my thing. You know, I had multiple subscriptions to hunting magazines, gun magazines. You know, I knew all the gun writers,
right?
You know, at least by name.
Yeah.
I didn't know them obviously personally, but I read their articles. That side of it intrigued me, you know, gun reviews, cartridge reviews, cartridge comparisons. And I ate up that kind of print media back in the, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s. And that kind of drove me to want to pursue something in a career in this industry.
Yeah, that's cool. I think we should note, because I can hear it in my headphones, so I'm sure that the audience can probably hear it as well, that we are pretty close to the underground lab, right? So if you do hear random gunshots, I mean, we're at an ammo facility, right? Like, we're at an ammo making facility, bullet making facility. So we're always testing.
Yep.
And that's happening within, I don't know, 100 feet of us, 50 feet of it.
Yeah.
Something like that.
One of the things I wanted to ask you is, yeah, you came in as a lab tech.
Yeah.
Like, talk through your progression, right? Like, and start with your current role, right?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do? What do you oversee, right? And then go backwards.
Okay.
Would love to just have everybody here, you know, you've touched every aspect of this facility over your 18 years.
Right. So current role, I am the ballistics lab and R&D supervisor. So my everyday is managing the lab, which that department touches a little bit of everything itself. You know, it's part of operations in that we're doing production testing. So I oversee that. The development side on new product development. You know, I have a team of R&D engineers that work under me, as well as lab technicians and an R&D tech. So I'm heavily involved on new product development. I work obviously with the marketing team a lot.
Yeah.
Tech support for, you know, trade shows, kind of those opportunities that keeps me. But I work with the operation team every day too.
Yeah.
You know, working with production supervisors and managers and sourcing for components. You know, they have daily interactions with that side of it, you know, manufacturing engineers as they support us through new development as well as on the tooling side. That's where I am now. I've been throughout the 18 years, I've always been, had some piece to the ballistics lab. But as the company has grown, you know, the roles have shifted and changed, obviously the opportunities. And we're still fairly small. You know, so we still wear multiple hats.
Right.
But again, if you go way back, you know, we were extremely small.
Yeah.
And so throughout those years, you know, working back, before that, I was the ballistics lab supervisor, had the R&D piece, was separate. So just working backwards, that was just the focus was the ballistics lab.
Yeah.
So that was a little more hands-on, day-to-day testing. Obviously, it was still the oversight management piece, you know, where we're getting more into processes and improvements and, you know, training and, you know, the management personnel side of things. But I've always been very still hands-on with the product and the product testing. We qualify the products every single day, both the bullets themselves, the projectiles, as well as the ammunition. You know, before that, I was a special projects technician. And so back then, barns wasn't as big. And we were, especially when we were getting into the ammunition market, we were pursuing both commercial ammunition as well as military law enforcement.
Right.
And so at that time, from more of a product management perspective, we, on the, what I'll call military law enforcement side, we handled that separately. And so I did assist more on that end, but not on the commercial side, but on the MLE side for my product management, tech support. So that was interesting. That was some pretty cool experiences, working with some different projects. On the technical side, when we've worked on cool stuff, you know, I was actual hands-on tech at that point, doing Doppler radar work, high-speed video camera, using the instrumentation in the underground range, all the ballistic coefficient measurements. I oversaw that. Ballistics gel testing. For quite a while, we had a big focus on FBI intermediate barrier testing with our bullets. And so I ran through that full protocol with a good amount of SKUs. And so I've shot, I would say, a fair amount of ballistics gel over the years, probably more than most.
Right.
I've dealt with and hand-loaded for pretty much every cartridge known to man, you know, at some point or another, every propellant, you know, I've touched, done load development for our reloading manual, load data.
Right.
So had my hands on that over the years. And before that, I was a lab technician. So my job every day was test bullets, handle right. bullets, shoot them for accuracy, shoot them for function in the water tank. And I did skip a few things in addition to those positions throughout the years. I also had some interim roles for a few years. I was also supervising general production department. Yeah. So got more hands on the production environment as well as the consumer service and tech support oversight. So
I got a question for you.
Okay.
You mentioned that you have basically loaded every bullet known to man. Do you have a favorite one?
Every caliber.
Every caliber.
Yeah, cartridge.
Caliber.
Like what's like, and you have to qualify, right?
Yeah.
Why is it your favorite? Is it most accurate? Is it, you know, most challenging? Like what's the craziest?
That's a hard question. Yeah. Yeah. That's like, name your favorite kid.
I got one.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
Yeah. It's easy.
Yeah. I mean, when you only have two or three, that's maybe a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true.
Okay. What's one that stands out?
Yeah, I'll have a few. It's going to be hard to narrow it to one. If I can go to like two or three.
Okay, I'll give you two.
Okay, two.
How about your favorite diameter?
Ooh.
Yeah. I thought that was going to be way easier for you.
Well, hold on. Let me answer my question.
Okay.
First.
Well, I was trying to like help the question along.
Yeah. 280 Ackley improved.
Okay.
That's one of my all-time favorites.
Why?
When I first was intrigued by it, I guess you'd say, it was a Wildcat. Now it's a standardized cartridge. But back then, the first rifle I built in 280 Ackley, it was a Wildcat cartridge. And it was my first Wildcat. Even though it's fairly standard, you know, but you couldn't buy brass. You know, you had to start with 280 Remington brass, fire form it in your chamber, which gave it the, you know, a little more straight, less taper, gave it to the 40-degree shoulder on the case. I like it because it gives you magnum performance. You know, it's basically a 7mm rem mag, but in a standard cartridge, meaning it's a little more efficient, uses a little bit less powder. It is a long action cartridge, which doesn't really matter for what I'm doing. It can fit potentially more rounds in a magazine than a belted magnum, 7rem mag. It's always shot well for me. I've used it for mule deer hunting, shot elk with it, antelope. It works good. It's accurate. But yeah, 280 Ackley. And I like to be a little bit different generally. You know, I don't always want to shoot the same cartridge that everyone else is shooting.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that. It's just kind of like you deal with these every single day.
Yeah.
You know, you've shot them all. It's kind of like, oh, let's mess with something different. 6.5 284 Norma is another one that was and has been one of my all-time favorites.
Have you ever felt like having this be your job has it affected or impacted your enjoyment as a hobby?
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, like, years back, way back when, we'd be in the lab, and Randy Brooks, you know, and we'll talk about him in the history of Barnes
coming
up. But Randy, when he would come through the lab, if he was bringing somebody through on a tour, you know, it could be a customer, some industry person, some friend, whatever, he would walk through the lab and he would joke, he'd always say, oh yeah, these, cause everyone's always like, oh, this is awesome. Like if you're a gun guy, if you're a hand loader and you walk in the lab, it's cool. You can't deny it. Like seeing the vault, the safe, the setup with all the loading benches, you're like, oh, this is the dream job. And he would walk by and he'd say, yeah, these guys pay us to work here. And then we'd all kind of just, you know, nobody'd say anything. And the guy, whoever's with him, would kind of like, haha, laugh. And they would walk off. And then we'd look at each other. We're like, yeah, we feel like that. You know, that was the inside joke. But no, I can truly say I've enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like I've always believed, you know, it goes back to kind of the saying, like, if you can find something you love, you don't work. That kind of saying, sure, it's still work. I mean, if I didn't have to work, I probably wouldn't, I guess, like most people. Yeah. But I it keeps you engaged. I can even say over 18 years, there's something new. And maybe it's because opportunities have been there or, you know, new projects come up, new potential ideas, cool new products. It keeps you engaged, keeps you excited. So that keeps me going. But there's times where it just becomes, when it's your hobby and your passion and you're living every day, like we joke, it's like, it's a good way to ruin a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, like you are hand loading in the lab, especially when you're a lab tech and that's your day to day is I'm sizing brass, prepping brass, priming brass, powdering. I'm cleaning guns and barrels and I'm going out and shooting. It's fun. Don't get me wrong. But like you do that 40 hours a week for 10 plus years.
Right.
You don't want to go home on the weekends and like break out the loading bench and
Head to the range and be like, oh, I need to go shoot my rifle a little bit. Yeah.
But it kind of comes in stages. Like I found myself where I'll start to maybe detach a little bit because you just need something different. And it's okay. I'm going to go dirt biking and I'm going to go mountain biking and I'm going to go fishing. And I've got these other hobbies that kind of give you those breaks.
Yeah.
But I always find myself coming back to it. It's still like, if you said like, what's one of your favorite things in the world to go do? You know, it's go shoot, go hunt, you know, talk about ballistics and cartridges and go load stuff. You know, and it keeps it exciting.
Okay. I'll stop asking questions now.
I mean, as he was kind of talking about 280 AI, and I don't know. I mean, this is kind of interesting to me. Do you know who actually standardized the 280 AI?
Yeah, it's actually, so there's, if I'm remembering correctly, it's...
And when it was?
Yeah. It's in one form, it was obviously a P.O. Ackley design, but I want to say it was actually an RCBS that more standardized the actual version with the 40-degree shoulder.
Yeah, I mean... Wikipedia is saying something else, but yeah, I thought it was very interesting that like, you know, it's kind of been around for a really long time, but then it didn't get standardized until 2008. Yeah.
Oh, you're saying who actually standardized
it?
Yeah. It was Nosler.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I thought you meant
that was pretty interesting.
I thought you meant like the actual Wildcat.
Yeah.
Cause the version that Nosler standardized as a SAMI cartridge.
Right.
Sorry. I wasn't following your question.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
That was closer to, I think, a different version than the P.O. Ackley, I guess.
Gotcha. Okay.
Actual cartridge drawing. Huh. One of the joys of Wildcats, there's multiple versions, right? Different chamber drawings and different reamers that one little tweak here or there.
But
Nosler standardized it. They screwed up though.
How?
They should have standardized it with a slightly faster twist rate.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a 1:9, which is better than a 7 rem mag with the 1:9.5.
Right.
SAMI standard. The current rifle that I've been using in 280 Ackley the last 9 years is a 1:8.44.
So yeah,
that's where they screwed up.
But so it should have been a 1:8.5.
Yeah, that would have made like, more sense.
Called it good.
Yeah.
Wow, podcast but one and coming out swinging
at the time, right? Like, I think a lot of that has to do with the time that it did it. I mean, like we weren't really kind of starting to push that BC limits and like building these cool new bullets, right, if you will. I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but like that's really the past 5 to 10 years that's really started to become
you're,
a larger thing.
You're right. And not to bash on Nosler, but you can look at the 26 Nosler,
right.
You know, the 28 Nosler.
Yeah.
They kind of missed the boat on it too. You know, right. It was still the, they were getting there with modern cartridge design, but it was still falling, you know, it wasn't belted. Okay. But it was still kind of that old school mentality where it's all about velocity.
It was like they got 70% there and it was like, yep, this is good enough.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it was still more that case capacity driven, velocity driven mentality. It wasn't more about efficiency and, you know, taking advantage of longer, sleeker, higher BC projectiles that can be stabilized with faster twist rates and potentially mag fed with slightly shorter cases.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of brings us more to where we are today with PRCs and 6.8 Western and those kind of cartridge designs. So
what do you think about 6.8 Western? We hear a lot of stuff on our social media, like always about 6.8 Western.
I've never heard of that.
I mean, I don't know. Have you seen anything come up on it?
Every time we post, every single time we post, whether it's Instagram, Facebook,
a DM, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Literally, I see you, whoever it is. I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. It's a good round. I have messed with it a little bit. You know, I mean, we've shot load data in the lab. I didn't personally do the development, but, you know, I proof all the data. I look at all the data. I compare it. I've personally loaded for it. I built a rifle in it.
Right.
Actually for my brother, and it's sat in my basement for like 2 years and it's still unfired.
That's pretty wild.
But I have a lot of projects. So
yeah.
But yeah. It's a good design. I'm excited about it. As a cartridge, I think it has potential more than most realize.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely the, you know, upgraded version of the old 270, right? Which I mean, me personally, right? And we kind of had this conversation when I first got started and everything. I mean, it's funny that we all kind of, what I want to say, kind of like circle around the same rough calibers.
Yeah.
Like I was always a 270 and a 7 mag guy. And then you're talking, you know, we're talking about 6.8 Western, just that little bit better version, right? 280 Ackley is a little bit better, a little different, right, than a 7 mag, but a little bit better version before the 7 PRC was coming out. So it's funny how there's newer calipers that just make those fine little tweaks that are able to up the ante, if you will, for that cartridge.
Yeah.
Why do you think the 6.8 hasn't taken off? Like when you think about our social media and how many people comment on, when are you going to make a 6.8 Western?
Definitely
6.8
coming Western, out Western.
Like all that, right? Like it comes on pretty thick.
Yeah.
But like it doesn't seem very prevalent. So is it one person out there that has different aliases and burner accounts, or is there a following?
Yeah, there is definitely a following. It's a good cartridge. I mean, there's no doubt. It's, like you said, it's a 270, obviously, 277 diameter bullet, but it follows more the modern. I mean, really, it's really close to a 270 WSM,
right?
But it's just a modern version of it.
Yeah.
It's faster twist. It's designed around longer, heavier, higher BC bullets. Maybe they should have called it a 270 Western instead of 6.8. Sometimes Americans and metric stuff.
Should have called it like a 270, like Superwism or something like that, right?
They could have.
Yeah.
270 PRC.
Yeah, there you go.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Couldn't resist.
We could throw something, anything out there.
Yeah. But I think timing. It's.
'Cause, I mean, that was like right there around COVID, right? That it kind of came out. So, if I'm correct,
I think so. It's maybe 2019, 2021, 2022, actually. Yeah, it's in the COVID years. Didn't have PRC in the name.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, that's a little bit of truth, I think.
It said that it was officially introduced into the market in 2021. So I guess, you know, they were probably doing a lot of their stuff during COVID. And then 2021, I mean, even January 2021 was still kind of a crap show, right? So I think that personally had a lot to do with it, just because, you know, people, yes, they were buying guns, but not nearly as much. And like you said, the PRCs were really gaining steam.
Yeah.
And then you look, what it was, 22, late 22, early 23, when the 7 PRC came out. And I think that just kind of, you know what I mean? It just took it to a whole new level.
I think gun guys, and I'm guilty, like everyone, we're kind of a funny bunch, because And I say this carefully because we like to design new products and introduce cool stuff to the market, but like, you could always argue, like, what are you doing that hasn't already been done? What are you solving that hasn't already been solved?
Yeah.
You know, do you really need a new gun? And obviously we all do, because we lose interest. We want something cool and exciting. We want something else to hunt with. Like, I love hunting. Like, hunting is a huge passion, but I don't want to go hunt with the same gun every single time. I don't want to go hunt with the same cartridge every single time. It's part of it to me is it's more than just the hunt. It's the whole experience. It's the gun is part of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be special. There's a story behind it. The cartridge, you know, it's not only the gun, it's even configuring the gun. You know, why I'm setting it up this way.
Right.
You know,
yeah. Putting this scope on it, putting this bullet through it, whatever.
This barrel length, this configuration of stock, all that's part of it. But, so I think that's maybe a bit of it. Like, the 6.8 was just timing based. And then this, I bring this, okay, like 6.5 PRC. 6.5 PRC is still popular. Mm-hmm. It was crazy popular. But then the minute 7 came out, boom. 6.5's dead. Now it's 7. Everyone who had a 6.5, now I need a 7.
Right.
Do you really? Maybe. Maybe not. You know?
I mean, but you should have one.
But you should.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody should have a little bit of everything, because we make great products for
everyone.
Most of everything that we've just talked about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right. Do we want to actually get into the...
Yeah, wasn't the point of this a history topic? Of Barnes?
The topic at hand, if you will, now that we're 28 minutes in, give or take.
Well, I'm fascinated to hear the history from your perspective, because as someone who's been here 18 years, right, you were here for, you know, the Brooks ownership, Remington, Claris, right, new ownership now. Like, you've seen a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of change.
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of questions about that, a lot of unknowns. You know, I know we go talk to people, we go to trade shows,
right.
You know, we run into people at the gun range or out on the mountain or wherever, you know, and you get that question. People who are familiar with Barnes and the brand and the company, there could be a little confusion of, because you hear things, you read things and, you know, in the news, you know, who owns you now? That kind of thing.
Right.
So yeah, we've lived through it all.
Yeah. You mean fake news?
Fake news.
Fake news.
Yeah. But yeah, it's there's been a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Who owns you?
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so when I started, Barnes was located in American Fork, Utah, just off I-15, and started as a lab tech, as I said. You know, at the time, 2007, this is just guess, but we were somewhere around 40 employees back then, give or take.
Right.
They had plans and were in process of building the new facility, which is the current facility that we're in now. That was underway. Construction had begun right about that time.
Yeah.
And so I worked in that facility for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, somewhere around there. And then, you know, at that time we were just a bullet company, you know, no ammunition. It was all building bullets. And so when I say bullets, obviously most people know this, but there's a lot of confusion with terminology incorrect, but bullet is just the projectile,
right?
Just the bullet, you know, not the cartridge, not the loaded round. So Barnes was a bullet company. And in those years we were heavily focused, as we still are, but with our all copper bullet line,
right?
You know, the TTSX was brand new in 2007, right around there. We'd only built a couple offerings when I started. I want to say we were running 30 cal, so 308 130 grain TTSX, like within the first month that I worked there.
Wow.
And I remember that because at the time I was a big 308 wind shooter.
Yeah.
And so I was excited because I was like, oh, I'm gonna load these 130 tips. So that was the first TTSX I ever messed with.
Nice. But
so again, no ammunition, jacketed bullets. Back then we were mostly doing varmint grenade stuff. That was a big popular product. Still a cool offering, lead-free, super frangible varmint option.
Yeah.
So we ran a lot of varmint grenades, a lot of TSXs, a lot of TTSXs. I don't know if anyone's familiar with the old XLC, the blue-coated X bullet.
Okay.
But we still had the XLC equipment on the floor, but it was done running. It was, you know, been decommissioned. It was just sitting there. But I always thought that was interesting because I was familiar with that bullet. Just as a consumer before I started working here. Small company, you know, the Brooks owned it at that point, Randy and Connie Brooks. Randy was the president. Connie was the vice president. She oversaw sales and marketing. Their daughter, Jessica Brooks, Did a lot of the branding and kind of helped with the marketing side as well.
Gotcha.
But
so, I mean, how did they go from, you know, being just a bullet manufacturer to say, you know what, we want to jump into the ammo space? Like, yeah. Like, how did that come about? Because obviously you were here for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
so at, you know, back then that was, I guess, more the natural progression.
Yeah.
You know, they had ambitions and goals. They didn't want, they weren't satisfied with just being a bullet company.
Gotcha.
We knew that ammunition was the next step.
Right.
Next opportunity to grow the brand.
Yeah.
To reach more consumers. You know, hand loading's amazing. I love it. It's great. You know, it's a great hobby. It's an opportunity to get more detailed, more hands-on, but not everyone has the time. Not everyone has the desire. Not everyone has the knowledge.
Yeah.
And so loaded ammunition, you know, it can get the Barnes brand and product in that many more hands.
Right.
You know, if you're only, you know, catering to hand loaders with projectiles, you know, obviously your market's a lot smaller than the general public that goes out and shoots factory ammunition. So that was the desire. But at the time, the company just wasn't ready.
Yeah.
You know, financially it was good and stable, but it didn't have the capital behind it to say, let's go invest, let's go get equipment, let's mm-hmm. increase right. capacity, let's hire more people, let's jump into ammo. And, you know, and they just built this facility. You know, ammo was definitely part of the plans, but when we moved into the new facility, it was June of 2009. That one's an easy one for me to remember because that's when we had our first child, our first baby.
Oh,
was
yeah.
born then.
Yeah.
He's almost 16 now, so
yeah.
like next week. But anyways, so yeah, we moved in this new facility. At that time, it was huge. You know, it was like empty. We had all this room.
Right.
Everyone had nice offices, and it was like, look at this new cool lab. The production floor was gigantic. We'll never run out of space was maybe the thought back then. You know, maybe not so true anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
But very soon it was kind of realized that, you know, hey, we need to do something to make the next step.
How often were you guys, I mean, cause you said that, you know, you only had a few TTSXs back then. Like how quickly were you guys developing new TTSXs to kind of
it was
fill out the line?
Pretty constant. Yeah. I mean, okay. throughout that first year and a half, it was basically, we were running something new. Constantly,
really?
You know, it was adding line extensions of new calibers,
yeah.
new weight offerings, so we could make the whole line of right. TTSXs for sure. We were still building some MRXs back then as well that had the tungsten core.
Yeah.
When we first moved into this facility in Mona, I should mention that we're in Mona, Utah now.
Yeah.
We were winding down the MRX, and I don't want to get too far into that. That could be an episode in itself, but we were actually discontinuing that product as we moved here, and just focusing on the TTSX as a tipped offering. So that's when talks began to basically go out and get the capital to expand into ammunition.
Yeah.
And so that's when at that time it was the Freedom Group, which owned Remington,
right.
purchased Barnes, and that deal closed in 2010.
Yeah. Go back. You know, I know it predates your time, but take us back to as you have been told, right, as it's been passed down,
yeah.
right, to 1989, right, the invention of the X-Bullet, like how it came to be, and then fill in that gap from, because, you know, Barnes does offer, you know, lead options, right, but
yeah.
they are known for lead-free, as you mentioned. So talk through the invention of the X-Bullet, and then, you know, give a piece about the MRX and
yeah.
all these other bullets that you've named. That
can I take a step back first?
Absolutely.
Okay, so
this Fred, is your show.
Okay, this is my show. So Fred Barnes is the original Barnes founder, and obviously I didn't know Fred Barnes. He was before my time.
1932.
Yeah, yeah. He built the first bullet. Barnes was founded in 1932, as you said, which was a lead core bullet.
Yeah.
It was the Barnes, as today is known, it was the Barnes Original. And we still produce Barnes Originals. It's a pretty small offering, but we have some diehard followers that still love those projectiles. And they were unique because at that time, there wasn't a lot of options in the bullet handloading world
yeah.
for quality, consistent, you know, deep penetrating but expanding projectiles. And so he was building these somewhat unique because he was using solid copper tubing with hard lead cores, you know, and so he got some expansion depending on the design, you know, some were spire point, some were flat point. But that was, he did a lot of wildcatting. You know, Fred, from what I've gathered reading and researching, you know, he was also kind of that ballistic gun guy. He was building some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
We'll even get questions today. We'll have some consumer, some customer call in or email, and he'll find some random gun from some pawn shop or who knows what gun library, and it'll be stamped some oddball cartridge with Barnes on the name.
Really?
You know, and it actually goes all the way back to the Fred Barnes days.
Wow.
Yeah. That's in fact, crazy. I had one a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
There was a, I can't remember now. It was a 375 something Barnes. I had to do some digging. You know, and they'll call us like, do you have data for this? Like, no, I don't. I don't know where you found that gun. I don't even know what it is. But no, it's cool because there was some cool stuff he was doing even way back. I mean, I found records of designs Fred was doing with quick twist stuff. I mean, we talk about the modern design with fast twist rates. He was building heavy for caliber bullets way back in the day with fast twist rates. Nobody knew about it. You know, this was more wildcat type stuff, but the thoughts, you know, they were there. But yeah, so Fred, I just bring that up. You know, that was the beginning. 1932, we built lead core bullets. That's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and it was mostly like a basement workshop for the most part. You know, there might've been a few times without getting into specifics that it represented somewhat of a functioning company, but it was mostly a pretty small operation.
Yeah.
All the way to like basically being non-existent until Randy and Connie Brooks purchased it. And that was in the 70s.
Okay.
But yeah, so that brings us to the 80s. Because really the beginning of Randy and Connie days, you know, from the way they told it, you know, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
You know, it was basically struggling to keep the doors open and to make a profit. And it was, you know, they had some employees at times, but it was even, you know, there's pictures, and I've been told a story from Jessica, you know, where they were little girls, her and her sister, in the basement of their house, stuffing, you know, cores and jackets and building bullets. So that was kind of the beginnings.
Yeah.
But in the 80s, the way I've always been told it, as you asked, you know, Randy, I will credit them, well, for a lot of reasons. You know, I have a lot of respect for Randy. But they went out, they knew, they recognized to build the brand, they had to go use the product. They had to go promote it. They had to go field test it. So Randy spent a lot of time in the field. You know, Randy, if you're doing any sort of reading, you know, especially if you go back 30 plus years, you know, I guess 40 years now, you know, Randy was kind of one of the world hunters of the time. You know, he's a pretty accomplished hunter. And he was going around using the product. You know, I mean, they built the brand in Africa, Alaska, you know, the world sheep, those kind of things. But back to the performance, he was in Alaska hunting brown bear, is the way the story's always been told.
Yeah.
And using a 375. And he was not pleased with the performance of the bullet he was using. You know, he felt that it lacked some penetration. You know, it didn't hold together well enough, didn't have enough weight retention to do the task at hand, at least the way he thought it should. And so at that time, that's where the idea of the original X bullet or the solid copper expanding bullet came, because he thought was, okay, these are all cup and core bullets, right? We have a lead core, we have a jacket, two-piece design, which can separate or expand too much and limit penetration.
Yeah.
And so that's when he thought, well, what if I just take the lead out? And so the story was he drew the first sketch, you know, on his flight home and came home and started messing around with building a punch and just a little, you know, cutting a piece of copper and trying to build the first X bullet. And that's where it all began.
So it really became, it became from a performance question, not, I think this is a misnomer, right? Not a regulatory toxicity issue. Yeah. It's strictly performance driven.
For sure. Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I actually try to make a point, you know, when I'm talking to consumers to educate on that. You're absolutely right. You know, the X bullet was introduced in 1989, and it was 100% performance. It was, Barnes, you know, was very innovative and forward thinking to say, let's not do what everyone else is doing. What materials are out there? You know, what alternate designs could we develop that give us the end result we want? Yeah, it's not, like you said, it's not environmental reasons. It's not regulatory reasons that drove us to using solid copper as a, you know, material to get the performance we want, which is, we still want expansion. You know, we need that pop in that temporary cavity. We need tissue damage and upset, but we want penetration and weight retention. And that's what the X-Bullet offered. You know, and it had some flaws, and we can talk through that when we get more detailed, you know, whether that's this podcast or others, when we talk about the evolution of the X-Bullet into the other designs. But you can't argue what it did to the market back then.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. Hit us with a two-minute evolution of the Copper Bullet.
Okay. So Barnes X-Bullet, it was, you know, solid piece of copper. It's taken from copper wire. It's cut into a slug, and it's, you know, on a transfer press. It goes through a series of punches and dies. It forms the shape, basically, and it has an internal cavity. So that internal cavity is where the magic is, really. There's a lot that goes into that through design and punches and angles. You know, you can't just, it's not a simple, you know, go build bullet.
Yeah.
And it worked. It functioned. It penetrated like crazy, had high wear tension. But the drawbacks were copper is not as dense of a material as lead.
Yeah.
Meaning for the same caliber and weight, your length goes up, right? It's longer. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to build a 270, 150 grain, and you compared a traditional lead core, and you looked at a 270, 150 grain X-Bullet, it's quite a bit longer. And that means you have more bearing surface. Right. The shank itself is longer. So as it's traveling down the bore, it's creating higher pressure. They had some fouling issues due to the copper material and that high bearing surface. And so that led us to the XLC bullet, which was the blue coated bullet. The coating was supposed to add lubricity. It was relieving pressure, and it did work. You could get higher velocities at lower pressure with an XLC bullet than a regular X bullet. But it was also, it was hard to manufacture. It was expensive. As you can imagine, you know, in a mass production environment, trying to coat these, you know, with equipment at the time, it was very labor intensive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they knew they had to continue to evolve, you know, and again, this is before my time, but we have some engineers that are still with us today, like Carl and, you know, like Greg Christensen, the general manager, you know, they back then were in those positions of production manager and engineer. And that's when they, you know, knew that they had to remove some of that material. They needed to reduce that bearing surface. And so that's what led us to the TSX, where the grooves are cut into the shank. And they actually are pretty amazing what happens. You know, we TSX them, as we call it, for a reason.
Right.
It reduces bearing surface, removes material, it reduces fouling. It actually increases accuracy. I mean, 9 times out of 10, we test the bullets off the press for accuracy without grooves cut into them. Mm-hmm. The grooves are cut in as a post-press operation, and then we test for accuracy as a finished bullet with the grooves. And I would say 9 times out of 10, they shoot better with the grooves cut into them. So accuracy is improved, pressure's reduced, you know, which means velocities can increase. You know, they don't foul, you know, as bad as before. So it was a big step with the TSX design. And then from there, you know, the polymer tip got added with the TTSX, you know, which obviously just makes it more aerodynamic, increases BC. The tip can help initiate expansion as well.
Right.
You know, at lower velocities and extreme angles, it can make it pop a little bit more. And then the LRX. And then even within the LRX, we have, you know, some of these newer generation bullets that are pushing the envelope because of cartridge design, back to like we're talking about, when we have faster twist rates and cartridge overall lengths that allow us to build longer, you know, exposed nose forward of the case mouth type projectiles. We can build more aggressive ogives and longer, sleeker bullets with longer boat tails and higher BCs and lower function windows. So without getting too specific, because we can cover that in, you know, their own separate conversations, but that's kind of the evolution of the copper bullet.
We need to get Fred Barnes, or not Fred Barnes.
I mean, we could.
We need to get Randy and Connie on the podcast for sure. I think hearing their story and the evolution of it would be super interesting for people to listen
to. So there is kind of an inside joke to some of us here that have been here a while, and that's Randy Barnes. Yeah, I've heard that one many a times. Randy Brooks, you know, we'll get guys that'll walk into the show. Is Randy Barnes here? There's no Randy. I'm really good friends with him, you know.
Yeah.
So
really.
Yeah. But yeah, no, Randy and Connie are great. Cool history. You know, they've put a lot in this company over the years, and you know, they were there through all that, obviously. You know, it was their baby and they built it. So But it's, you know, we've evolved and changed a lot in the last 10 years as well. So,
right.
Yeah.
Before we leave, why don't you set out for the listeners and the consumers, like what the objective of our podcast is, right? There's so many options out there, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Vortex, whether it be Tricer, this, that, the other one, right? What are we aiming to do here?
I mean, I think that as I envision the podcast, as we've been talking about this over the past 6-8 months, right? Like, I think that we want to be short and to the point, hence the bullet point names, right? Is that we want to have kind of quick hitters. Our goal is to be under an hour, and I would even say try to push for under that 45 minutes. We just hit 45 minutes on this one, which is pretty nice. But we want to go over not only our products, but also bring in interesting guests. I think that always helps, you know, from hunters to obviously, you know, rifle manufacturers, optics, whoever that it is that wants to talk. But I think that we just want to do that to be able to help tell our story. I think that we've been able to be out on a lot of other podcasts with Greg, myself, and others, right? Like talking, but it's always nice to be able to like help tell our story and then also potentially answer other people's questions, right? Yeah. Like we've talked about, you know, potentially having, you know, once every couple months doing like a frequently asked questions and getting with our consumer services and getting those frequently asked questions that they're getting, you know, weekly, monthly, whatever that it is. So I guess that's, did that answer the question? Is that what you're
educational, entertaining,
absolutely,
right? And then a mix of both, right? Just try to
some hunting stories, right? Like, I mean, we'll have, you know, hunt recaps, a little bit of everything, right? And like you said, educational, entertainment, and hopefully a little bit funny here and there, and we kind of can joke around.
Yeah,
get to know us.
Get to know Barnes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
People like Sloan coming on. Right, we'll have different guest appearances from other employees, right?
And I mean, I guess with that, like, we really didn't even introduce ourselves.
Yeah, you missed that one. That's okay.
So
I was going to bring it up, but I didn't.
We just kind of jumped right into it. I guess we were so excited to get the podcast off the ground. Yeah. But
go ahead. You go first.
Okay. So I'm Dale Evans. I guess I will be the host / co-host of this. We'll have other people on here as well. I'm the marketing manager. I've been at Barnes for right at about a year now. Been within the hunting industry for close to a decade. But yeah, I've been a Barnes shooter for close to 20 years as well. As I got into reloading, I started reloading TTSX right off the bat. That was just kind of my thing. So I've been around the family for a long time. So now it's kind of this really cool full circle moment for me to be the marketing manager and help tell that story of a brand that I've been so involved with for 2 decades.
Nice. Yep. And I'm Andrew Sparks. I'm the VP of marketing and business development. For those of you who don't know, right, we're also sister companies with Sierra Bullets. So I oversee both brands on those departments. I have been in the industry for a year. I have been shooting Barnes as long as I've been shooting. Yeah, I think that's, you know, I'll be on here from time to time, but
right.
I tend to like to be behind the curtains as opposed to like out in front of the camera.
Right.
So.
Well, sweet. Well, I think that, did you get everything that you wanted to?
The only thing I didn't cover, I guess, that just popped in my head that I missed was kind of that ownership throughout that history.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
We can cover that another time, or I can cover it like in 30 seconds, but
yeah, you can. I mean, I've written down like BC, FBI testing, you know, the, you know, getting Randy on here and the evolution of the bullets. I mean, we have 15 topics that came out of you just talking.
Right.
But yeah, go ahead. Cover the ownership.
You know, Remington, I said that one, that's kind of where I left off.
Right.
Went into the, Freedom Group, which morphed into Remington Outdoor Company. When Remington Outdoor Company split up, Claris picked us up, which had also purchased Sierra Bullets. And so that's where that Sierra Barnes piece came into.
Right.
Since 2019.
Since 2019.
Right? I think people are amazed by that. People are like, oh, they're owned by the same group. They have been for the last 6 years.
Right. Nothing
right.
new.
Right.
Yep. And then JDH Capital, which purchased Barnes and Sierra since, we're going to say, you're no more than I do.
2023. 2024.
Yeah.
2024.
Yep.
Yep. We signed, I believe JDH Capital signed the purchase agreement on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve in 2023.
Yeah. Which has been great. You know, and I can say that honestly and truthfully as an employee who's been here 18 years,
right,
who has lived it through all the thick and thin, like I can honestly say I'm excited. Like I'm excited where we're going. I like the leadership team. We've done some cool stuff with Sierra already, and we're doing more and more with them. You know, Barnes and Sierra are still their own brands and they have their own teams, but I think the potential is there and the growth is there. It's as good as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Or better.
Well, that's good to hear. That's refreshing.
Yeah.
It's definitely refreshing.
He wouldn't have said that if you weren't on the podcast.
Yeah. Oh, I'm an honest person.
I know. Well, we appreciate everyone listening and watching. If you're watching on our YouTube, we'll have this available at multiple different outlets that you can find your podcast, as well as on our YouTube channel. We're going to try to put these out pretty regularly throughout the summer here. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully kind of get some extras, if you will, throughout hunting season as we're doing hunts and getting through fall and doing some cool hunt recaps. But yeah, this is exciting. I'm happy to have you guys here, and thanks for being on episode one.
Yeah. I think it started off very well.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right. Thanks, guys.